Thank you. Good morning. It doesn't go far enough, does it? And it'll work. And this afternoon, I'm going to my sister's house because we're celebrating my mum and dad's Ruby wedding anniversary, which was last weekend. Now, things change, don't they? Because I remember my grandparents' Ruby wedding anniversary, and we had it in the old building over there. And that is incredibly different to being in here, plus we're not actually having a party at church like we always used to when we were kids either. Things do change, don't they? I remember when I was a child, which is not as long ago as some people in here. We had 4 TV channels, didn't we? And when number 5 came out, it was a bit of a naughty one. And then Sky and all that kind of stuff, we didn't have that. Or we chose to sponsor a child, Cheryl did, so we got rid of Sky. I was really happy about that. Well, he is anyway. I noticed something really interesting as well with my own children that's different to when I was a kid. I used to watch TV when I got in from school, watch a bit of Neighbours and stuff like that while having our tea. And then we kind of got games consoles and we played on those games consoles for a while as well. My cousin Dave used to play on his for a lot longer than the rest of us, and I used to sit and watch him do that. Now, for my son's 8th birthday, he got an Xbox, and he likes to play on that, but a really weird phenomenon that you have in kind of teenagers today is they watch people play computer games. Does anybody have any children who sit and watch other people play computer games? I'm just like, do you not want to play this because you've got the game? No, I'm watching him play it. And I think, you know, at the start, I got angry with Jonah about this because I couldn't understand it. I'm like, it's something that is not part of my generation's makeup. It's kind of weird. And then I'm thinking, okay, let me just get used to this a little bit. Let me think about it. If he wasn't watching somebody playing a computer game, he'd either be playing a computer game himself or watching TV. There isn't that much difference between those, is there? So you've got to kind of rationalize that. Things change over time. And sometimes when we're a little bit older, we're not quite comfortable with that at the start because it's just not something that we did. Yeah? Turn to the person next to you, and I want you to talk about something with them that has changed over time that's weird, or you don't quite get a handle on it, or you don't quite understand it very well. So something used to be like this, but it's not anymore, and I don't like it, you know? Try and talk to somebody about that just for a minute. I'm going to come around and ask you about it. This could take ages. This is like proper grumpy old man kind of territory, isn't it? Okay, all right. Thank you. Now, I know you're going to be talking, because this is going to give rise to all kinds of stuff, isn't it? Hi this side. This is one of those things where, you know, when you're talking to your mates and you're saying something like, TV's not as good as it used to be, is it? You know, when I was a kid, such and such were on, it was miles better, not all this strange graphic stuff that's all on computers. We have proper cartoons. Oh, yeah. Right, come on. What have we got? What's different? Try and keep it slightly light. I don't want to kind of like cause any major controversy here. Anybody going to give us something?
Well, years ago I used to use a typewriter and now it's all on the computer.
Those flipping computers ruining our lives. They've got minds of their own, haven't they? Anybody else? Come on.
My old ladies used to say, her grandmother said to her when she wanted something and she couldn't have it, you've as much chance of that as getting a man on the moon.
Yeah. Things change, haven't they? Men on the moon, you're crazy.
I'm back to watching Teletubbies in our house, and they all go really fast because it's all like computerized.
Not as good as it used to be, is it, Teletubbies?
It's not. They used to be the real like puppets and fat, and now they're like all super powered.
Same with Star Wars, isn't it? It used to all be proper puppets and animation. Now they just use computers. Cheats. They're rubbish. Anybody got anything else? Anything that's changed? Yes, Richard, I was hoping we'd get you.
I used to like Disney animation.
Yeah.
But now it's that fast, you can't follow it.
Pixar. They've wrecked everything, haven't they? Pixar. All right.
Zombies in zombie films are just too fast now. Yeah. They never move that fast. They were really like that. Now they're like
lightning. And now you're a bit older, you won't be able to get away from them. If this zombie apocalypse actually happens, I'm never going to get away from these zombies. They're so fast, and they don't die. I know. It's crazy. The world is crazy. It changes, doesn't it? And the title of the talk that we're looking at today, I've written down as this, Bread for the Children and Crumbs for the Dogs. This is going to be interesting and challenging. It's not a massively long passage, but man, I had to read and write about this for hours and hours and hours before I could get my head around it because of the depth of what is part of what we're looking at here. And just before we read over this passage, I want to just talk a little bit about Bible scholarship and how when I read the Bible, I kind of see this arc of truth or this arc of a grand narrative, a big story that we find in the Bible. And some kind of Christian scholars talk about the Bible having the qualities of a redemptive hermeneutic where there are boundaries that are pushed all the time from generation to generation where Old Testament prophets and figures, they push at so hard with some kinds of laws, they get into trouble for it or they get put to death. Jesus is exactly the same. He pushes so hard at the cultural and social norms of his day, he is put to death for doing that. And it always reminds me when I think about this of Martin Luther King's quote about the moral arc of the universe being long, but it bends towards justice. And so when I read the Bible, I always think about this arc of kind of truth. It's a very long wait for us to get to the justice, the equality, and the love that we require and need, but it does bend towards that. The Bible and the teachers of Christ bend towards love, equality, and justice. Okay, I'm not really going to use any notes, so if that goes wrong, my wife will tell me later. Now, I'm going to read from the book of Mark. We're going to go to chapter 7. I'm going to start at verse 24. I'm going to treat this in three different steps. First of all, I'm going to do an exegesis, which is basically a critical read through a passage. So when I'm reading it, I'm just going to basically commentate on what I'm seeing, okay, and what I'm getting from this. Then I'm going to do an explanation of that critical reading, okay, and then I'm going to apply that, all right, and that's where you need to fasten your seatbelts, okay, exegesis, explanation, application. Now, up until this point, we've been doing a series about the book of Mark. And it's been going on for quite a while. Stephen and I kicked it off some months ago, and then something else happens, and then we come back to it again and things like that. So we know, if we remember this, that the Gospel of Mark was probably written around 64, 65 AD. It's a gospel for us, not to us. Okay, it's written for us. It's an anchor gospel. Matthew, Luke, and John reference the book of Mark. They use that for their own storytelling purposes. And throughout this gospel, Jesus is in conflict. He's in conflict with the religious authorities in the main. He is constantly pushing at laws. You remember when John was speaking the other week, he talked about the whole code, the cleanliness code, and about defilement and things like that. What I'm going to talk about today really is just the kind of fruition of what John was talking about. If you haven't heard that, maybe just download or listen to that this week, and this will become a little bit more clear for you if you listened to that. But I will reference what John was saying a little bit as well. Okay, the characters throughout this book struggle with the identity of Jesus. This is a common theme that we find in the Gospels. His disciples really struggle to know and understand who he is, and so the religious authorities. Interesting that we're going to read about a woman today. She doesn't struggle with it. okay? We're going to think about this. Remember, it's written to a community under duress, a community who's perhaps struggling to understand how they live out their Christian life or the teachings of Christ in their society. That's no difference to the society that we live in, okay? We're not under duress because we're all white middle class by where we live, basically, and an income. But trying to figure out how we live out the Christian message in today's world isn't easy at all for some of us, for most of us, okay? And there's also this struggle with Jesus as being a Messiah or a Messiah figure, okay? Now, I'm going to read. I'm reading from the NIV. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. You might have Syrophoenicia in your Bibles. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence a secret. Okay, so Jesus has gone to a place in Syrophoenicia. This isn't a place that is in Israel or Jerusalem. It's outside there. It's in a Greek area. It's an area where there are people who are religiously unclean. They are not pure blood, okay? They are not Jews, all right? And I'm just going to keep reading. I'll go through this, I think. So Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. First, let the children eat all they want, he told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Lord, she replied, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. Okay, now, that is a weird passage. Does anybody read that and think that's a bit weird? Because there's this story about healing and demon possession, and then there's this kind of this aphorism in the middle of it, this kind of proverb, where Jesus starts talking about bread and crumbs, and she starts talking about it as well. It does not fit with our kind of Western reading. A lot of us read the Bible and just take it for what it is. I cannot do that. So Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre, verse 24. So Jesus has left his normal kind of stomping ground. He has had a kind of an argument with the religious authorities about cleanliness and uncleanliness because the disciples are eating with unclean hands. I know. And he entered a house and did not want anyone to know it. Jesus has gone incognito to where he is now. And he doesn't want people to know. Why would he not want anybody to know? And there's a really interesting motif here that we find all the way through the gospel writings, especially in the book of Mark. When Jesus goes into a house, something happens. Has anybody noticed that before? Yeah? When Jesus goes into a house, something happens. It usually is linked with the fact that he's going to instruct his disciples in some way. So when you read in Mark and Jesus goes into a house, something's going to happen, something's going to be said. Okay? So he entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there, yet he could not keep this his presence a secret. Jesus is a famous Torah teaching rabbi. He isn't just some kind of backwater guy. He's well known, all right? And he's left where he usually is, I don't know, to get some peace or not, but just to do something else. Let's assume that Jesus is strategic in what he is doing. He's going somewhere where you wouldn't expect to find a kind of true Jewish rabbi. Are we okay with that? Because he shouldn't really be mixing with people who aren't Jewish. He shouldn't really be mixing with people who are unclean. But he does that a lot, doesn't he? He does that a lot. He likes to hang around with tax collectors, prostitutes, and all kinds of people who aren't religiously, legally right on the money all the time. Okay? In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek. Really, let's just note this. She was a Greek born in Syrophoenicia. Mark is making a very specific point here that this woman is like a triple Greek. She's not even just kind of Greek. She is more than that. She is not just kind of Greek. She's Syrophoenician. She's from Tyre. he goes to great lengths here to tell us that this woman is not the kind of woman who Jesus really should be talking with. You know, Jesus is a Torah teaching rabbi, shouldn't even be talking to a woman. Do we understand the context of the Bible in this sense that a rabbi, a Torah, a Jewish teacher, he doesn't talk to women. That is unclean, okay? That is not what he should be doing. But then he also speaks to a Greek woman from Syrophoenicia. Mark is basically, his readers are reading this going, God, this guy is seriously kind of, you know, pushing the boundaries here of what you should do and what you shouldn't do. You know, the religious leaders aren't, they won't be happy about this. He's talking to a woman, and a foreign woman. First, let the children eat all they want. This is weird. This is just weird where this happens. He told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. In scholarship, we see this as a kind of, it's a challenge. And there's two ways this can cut. There's two ways you can read it. And one isn't particularly comfortable if we really think that Jesus is all-knowing and everything. And one is slightly more. I'm going to explain those two to us, all right? So Jesus is talking to a woman, and she wants something from him. She wants some kind of healing for whatever her daughter has. And he smacks her down because he says, he doesn't say, I'll sort that out for you. He says, you know, I'm not really here for you. The bread is for the children, not the dogs. So is Jesus speaking to this woman in a kind of a pejorative sense, as in, is he being really negative towards her? You're a woman, you're a Greek, you're a dog. That doesn't sound very nice. It doesn't sound very Jesus-y, does it either? And then she says something very, very interesting. She says about even the crumbs that the children have, even the crumbs under the table, the dogs can eat. And there's a response from Jesus from that, in which he says, your daughter is now healed. Now, how do we read this? We've got Jesus who basically, because she's a Gentile, uses the term dog towards her, and she still comes for some kind of blessing or some kind of healing. Now, some scholars would talk about this as being a kind of a, Jesus does have a problem here because he actually behaves like an archetype, stereotypical Jewish man in the fact that he's encountering a woman, a foreign woman who's asking him for something. So he says to her, no, you're a dog. My words and my ministry are for the children. Let's just stop for a minute and think about this word bread. Now, we have a colloquialism, and Torah is bread. So if you get your Bible and flick it right from Genesis through to Malachi, this is what give us this day our daily bread. Bread is Torah, okay, in Jewish tradition. And we see this repetition all the way through. We see this in Mark as well. This story is part of the kind of the bread series of teachings. We had feeding of the 5,000, yeah. We have disciples eating bread. Then we have Jesus being asked for some crumbs and talking about bread again. Then Jesus feeds the 4,000 almost immediately after this. So we've got a kind of this story of bread. Bread is a recurring theme throughout this. Because Jesus, when talking about bread, isn't really talking about something that you're actually going to eat. This is metaphorical. And when Jesus in the book of John says, I am the bread, he's not literally like a loaf of Warburtons, is he? You know, I am the bread. But and then you read that and some of us are like, yeah, well, that's weird. Again, weird. He's talking about himself as bread. But we know, don't we, that the Torah and the teachings are the bread that people eat on a daily basis. We see this theme all the way through the Old Testament. He gives manna or bread in the desert to people who are lost. And we talk about these prayers in the Psalms and the Proverbs. Bread is a common theme. And she is asking for something of Jesus for her. The woman who is an alien, she is a person who is an immigrant or a person who is not one of the chosen people of Israel. She is a dog in this term. She's a Gentile, okay? What does that make us? Dogs, Gentiles. That's what I'm looking for, yeah? That's what I'm looking for. We're dogs, man. We're dogs. There's a second reading that you can also look at this, that Jesus plays the game here because he is between a rock and a hard place, and it's really difficult because he's got people watching him. and checking out what he's saying and what he's doing. And he basically is saying to her, she's wanting something from him, and he's got to say, right, to keep my street cred here, I've got to either tell her to go away and deny her this, or I've got to try and be diplomatic. But he does something incredibly clever. He offers her a proverb. And this is a game that we find that rabbis play with people. And he offers a way out. And let's just get this completely right. He says this, first, let the children eat all they want, he told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Make no mistake, Jesus is saying that my ministry and my word is for the people of Israel, for the Jewish people. I'm a Torah teaching rabbi, it's for them. All right? That's what he's saying. But, because that's what people want to hear, all right? Then she does something very clear, very, very clever, all right? If you want to read anything that's interesting in the Bible, that's kind of revolutionary and interesting, just look for a verse about a woman, and it'll be there. I kid you not. You know, if you go through this book, the men are so stupid, the disciples are so stupid, the women, bang, straight on it. So what does she reply? She says, yes, Lord, she replied, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. For such a reply, you may go. And the demon left her daughter. She went home and found her child lying on a bed. The demon had gone. Jesus plays a game with this woman in front of everybody to try and get something that he needs her to say. He can't do anything because his hands are tied, but he wants to do something. So he puts out the kind of stereotypical little rhyme, little proverb, and she is clever. And then she starts talking about crumbs under the table and for the Gentiles, and it's very, very, very good. She gets this. She gets it, all right? So Jesus can grant her request. Interestingly, there's a distance healing again. There's a few stories of distance healings in the book of Mark. There's several. Stuart, what's the significance of that? The distance healings are always towards Gentiles. They're always for the dogs. He doesn't go and heal these people. He does it from a distance. We can read into that another time, perhaps. Interesting that he doesn't go and see the girl. If you think about the story of Jairus' daughter earlier on in this book, he goes, sees the girl, heals her. They're Jewish. With the Gentile, he doesn't do that. This isn't about demons, and it's not about healings. This is about social and cultural normalities. Okay? All right? So, we've got this very interesting Syrophoenician woman who seems to be actually very intelligent, very full of faith, and we can learn a lot from her. I'm just going to check my notes to make sure I'm saying what I want to say. Yep, that's good. So, the context then for this Syrophoenician Greek woman is just in this whole section. This is all about following on from our idea about clean foods and not clean foods. And this is what John was talking about. This story specifically addresses the particular issue of Jesus' mission to both Jews and Gentiles. Okay? Specifically, a woman is so important because she's a Gentile. And she stands in contrast to both the disciples and the Jewish religious leaders of her day. You okay with that? Yeah? She is so different to them. And she's not a religious leader, and she's not a man, because she's a she, and she's a woman, and she's not even Jewish. The crux of the story first, the children, the dogs, the bread, and then being filled with something. Mark takes the story of this Syrophoenician woman, a woman from near Turkey, on the coast of Syria or Iraq. Mark does something very interesting, okay? He underscores this idea and force of Jesus' teaching that removes barriers. I went to get barriers all over this morning, but that's the only thing we could find, okay? He removes these barriers between people. He deals with defilement in the verses that John talked about the idea of clean and unclean. But he still maintains this distinction between two important groups here, both Jews and Greeks. And by drawing attention to Israel's entitlement, because they feel entitled to the Messiah, he refers to them as children, and it's their bread. And God's blessing is through Jesus. But Jesus doesn't remove this idea to Israel's entitlement in his mission. He keeps it there because it's important for them. Just like if we're in church this morning, we need to know that we've got a message for us, not just for everybody else. Yeah? So the Syrophoenician woman accepts Israel's importance in the story here. She accepts that they are the children. And she also, though, comes through in recognizing Jesus. But because she recognizes Jesus and recognizes his mission, she recognizes his identity, that all of his followers, from disciples through to the religious leaders who are in conflict with him, they don't recognize that, but she does, this foreign woman. He delivers her daughter from whatever she is going through, okay? It's a classic, this is a classic device from Mark that exemplifies Jesus' power by using this kind of delivery from demons. This goes through the Gospels where Jesus' power is underscored by the Gospel writings in this kind of delivery, okay? So the reply from the woman means that she is qualified to also have Jesus' blessing, and that is good news, okay? And that is the Gospel message. That it's not just for the Jews, it's for everybody. Jesus is teaching his bread is for everybody. Because a lot of us get hung up on Torah, like we've got to follow these rules and laws. But Jesus is like, no, I am the bread. Yeah, not the words on the sheet, I am. Okay? So we need to then think about how we can look at this. Remember, this is utterly and absolutely consistent with Jesus breaking social boundaries. Yeah? Yes, Israel is important, but it isn't. His ministry isn't just for them. It's for others. It's for everybody. Not just for America either, or the white middle classes. It's for everybody, okay? Jesus' ministry transcends national, political, cultural, and ethnic boundaries. It transcends all of those things. And because of that, there's a kind of a frightening sense to Jesus' message. We've done the exegesis, we've looked at what the Bible says, I've tried to explain some of the cultural norms of the day about this idea of bread, but also about this woman who challenges Jesus to a deeper teaching about how we're not dogs, yeah? We are entitled just as much as anybody else to the message of Christ if we show faith and willing, yeah? Okay, yeah? So we show faith and willing and we recognize who Jesus is as Messiah, and it's just open to you as well. That is the message of Christ, okay? Now, I'm going to put a few pictures up here, and this is where we just need to fasten our seatbelts a little bit, okay? Because the application of this is not easy for our lives. It's easy in one sense. I know what I want to say, but I've got to serve our community in what is best for us to hear, okay? All right? So, there is so much going on in our world. You remember this picture of a little boy who washed up on the beach, and he had drowned because there were refugees leaving Syria, and they were in a boat, and his body washed up. I have a little boy, and when you have your own children around that age, it's very difficult to see those kinds of things, okay? I saw this in the news as well recently, that children in schools are whitening their skin to avoid racial hate crime. We've got a few social stigmas in our society, haven't we? We've got a whole thing about refugees and immigrants, but we've also got things about sometimes to do with people's skin. We're an incredibly white church, aren't we? Okay? And also, we've got various things going on with people who are gay in our society as well. And this was in the news a few weeks ago where two women got beaten up on a bus in London because they refused to kiss for some males who were on the bus who wanted to see them kiss because they're gay. And they refused to do that, so they beat them up. They beat them up. Now, Jesus breaks down social and cultural boundaries in every single sense and every single way. Now, within my family, we have differences. Yeah, okay? So I think at the last general election, we could probably note about several different parties that we voted for, and you know, same when it comes to the European elections or the Brexit debate. Within our household, some people voted to leave the European Union, some people voted to remain, and you know, some people vote for the Conservatives, some for the Liberal Democrats, some for Labour, some for the Liberal Democrats. So I've said that already, haven't I? The Greens. but we still love each other. We're still family. You know what I mean? We, you know, I think the only thing that happened, that those people who voted Remain and lost that election kind of were deeply crippled. And those people who voted and kind of they were on the side that got the majority, they were just kind of apologetic. I'm sorry. And that's fine, isn't it? Okay, we love each other, we care about each other. And it's the same with all our families. We all have different views and opinions. You know, we can fall out about what we want to eat. My wife's a vegan, and I'm not. And my children don't really eat meat that much. So when I come to cook tea at night, it's very difficult because everybody's got a different opinion about what they want to eat. And my son is very picky with his food. I think I'm just going to feed him toast forever. And he seems to be okay with that. Or pizza or toast. Or cereal, yeah. within this room, we all have different views, don't we? Some of us voted to leave the European Union. Some of us voted to stay into the European Union. Some of us, we vote for different political parties, don't we, as well? We don't all vote for the Greens. Some of us vote for other parties. because we have different opinions, and we have different views on that. So as I just talk through a few things here, I want us to remember that we are a community, a church, a mosaic of beliefs and a mosaic of understanding about the world. And we don't all believe the same thing, I'm afraid. We don't, okay? But because we believe in Christ, we believe that we can love each other despite that. And we come together in spite of our differences and we disagree well. If we don't do that, we're not really following the message of Jesus, I'm afraid, okay? And we see that time and time again. Last time I was speaking with Stephen, we talked about how there are various denominations, over 40,000 denominations in the Protestant church. In my life in church here, I've seen people leave and set their own churches up because they want to everybody to believe the same thing. But that's a cult, and we're not a cult, okay? And this is not a dictatorship either, okay? So, let me read some facts out, and you can see where I'm going with this. Approximately 20% of gay people have been bullied in work. Almost half of transsexual people under 26 say they've attempted suicide. Almost 60% said that they considered suicide. Half of LGBT children are bullied in school because of their orientation. I'm going to change tact a little bit as well. 72 countries in the world criminalize same-sex relationships. Evidence of the death penalty's existence as a punishment for same-sex couples is also alive in about 8 of those countries. Different topic, mental health. At any one time, a sixth of the UK population between 16 to 64 have a mental health problem. Sorry for those who are over 64 and have a mental health problem. I didn't mean to exclude you. Or under 16. There are 6,000 suicides in men each year due to mental health. It's the biggest killer of men in the UK. There's loads of things that I could have talked about in terms of what divides us and what problems are caused. I could just look through some of the things on the news and some of the newspapers. Obviously, I read The Guardian and The Independent. For various things that happen in our society about hate crime and treating each other poorly, about inequality, about the wage gap difference, all kinds of things to do with, I suppose, women in the workplace as well, and high heels being worn in the workplace or not, or whatever. Yeah. So, where does this really leave us? We're okay to talk about inclusivity in a church. It's so important. I just think when I see the teachings of Christ, especially with the teachings of the Syrophoenician woman here, we see something that's not just about equality. We see something that's about radical inclusivity. Because we're okay with inclusivity. We want to kind of have wheelchair access, or we want to have meals for elderly people who are lonely, or we want to have children's groups. You know, that's inclusivity. It's not radical inclusivity. That's just treating each other normally. That's just treating people how we should be treated. But there are people in our world who are alienated, and there are people in our world who won't come into our church because of perhaps what they think or what they feel, whether that's because they're gay or transsexual, or whether that's because they're an immigrant, or they've got a different coloured skin, because so often we focus on law and legalism rather than love. And I just want us to talk a little bit about this, and I am completely sure that we all have different views and opinions on this, and that is absolutely fine because we love each other and we are a community of mosaic, a mosaic of beliefs. But what we have to understand is that things do change and things move on, and just like all the things that we don't like that move on in our world. Some of us sometimes are going to have to think about things have moved on this, and maybe I need to change my heart to this as well a little bit. I know I've had to do that. Okay, when I was in high school, my views about the Bible and sexuality aren't what they are now. Okay, but I'm not going to push that hard because I'm here to serve the community this morning. And I want to harken back to this word that I used at the start of what I was talking about, which is a redemptive hermeneutic. If you remember as well, I talk about hermeneutics quite a bit when I talk. And Hermes was one of the Greek gods who delivered messengers. And in biblical interpretation, we have this phrase, hermeneutics. It's how we interpret something. What's the message of this text? Okay? And so when we talk about redemption, we talk about renewing something and making something right again. And when we look at the Bible sometimes, when we look at the Bible all the time, we read it through the eyes of Jesus because we know what Jesus says. And Jesus redeems lots of laws in the Bible or lots of ideas in the Bible. He reclaims them for the common day or his common day, okay? And he comes into so much conflict for that, yeah? He's friends with women. He's friends with prostitutes. He's friends with tax collectors. He never talks about gay people, ever, okay? But he says, you've heard it said this. You've heard it said an eye for a tooth for a tooth. But I say, love your neighbors yourself. Turn the other cheek. Love your enemies. He sets down this bar for lifestyle, which is so hard to follow because he is radically inclusive and his love is radical. And I want us to think just briefly about perhaps how radical is our love and our inclusivity. Do we love people up to a certain point, as in we like the same food and clothes and we agree on the creation story and how it came about, so we're friends? Or are we able to be radically loving and radically inclusive in terms of who we can bring into our lives, who we can love and who we can care for? Because that's what this story is about. It's about these social, cultural, economic norms being broken to pieces. And it's very hard for us to change these things. If you think about the story of the Good Samaritan, which isn't in Mark, but he talks about loving your neighbor in Mark, it's in Luke. There are various people who walk past the Samaritan who shouldn't walk past the Samaritan. The Jewish man. And the Samaritan helps him because the Samaritans are hated by the Jews, so you don't expect him to do that. What issues do we walk past every day as Christians and just think, nothing to do with me. I don't want to get involved. What issues do we walk past? Because Jesus challenges us in this story. If you read about a woman, man, you are going to be challenged. Because he says, this is for you, not just for them, not just for us. It's for everybody. But what does that mean if it's everybody? That is hard, isn't it? That is so hard for some of us who are different to other people from different nationalities, different walks of life. It isn't always easy. It's not friends that we'd be with. It's not easy to be friends with people you don't like, or it's not easy to invite people around that you don't like. We tend to stick to groups that we get on with and to people that we get on with. And our churches can also look like that. They are more of a kind of a cove or a small inlet where people of the same thought and ideas can gather about legalism, not about love. And that really is the challenge for us this morning. This kind of radical love and exception is exemplified here because I know there are people in this room who are completely okay with gay marriage and people who aren't okay with that. I know there are people who are young earth creationists in this room and people who are not, people who are in evolution and Big Bang and everything else. I know that, okay? But what we have to understand is that when we look at people being beaten up because of their sexuality or thrown out of a country because of their nationality or bullied or committing suicide because of their either illness or whatever, we've got to ask the question, what is the church doing about this? And what is our church about when it comes to this kind of thing? If somebody from a group or some kind of different person comes into our congregation, how do they feel? Do they feel loved and welcomed radically, or do they just feel tolerated? Because we have a problem in the evangelical church. We're not evangelical, are we? Some of us are, sorry. I'm Anglican, by the way. Some of us are evangelical, sorry. We're nonconformist. In the sense that there is a problem that we have this cloak and dagger relationship with people. We put our arm around them to get them into church and we go with this, you know, belong, believe, behave. We'll get you to belong and then I'm going to teach you how to behave. Oh no. Believe. And then you'll behave how I want you to behave. That is a recipe for disaster, isn't it? And we leave them. We just leave them because they're in. They belong, they believe, behave. I'm fine now. I can go after somebody else. We don't love people for who they are sometimes and what they are. And we have to do that. That is the hallmark of friendship and relationship, is that I love you for who you are. That is why I'm married to somebody. I love her for who she is. And I hope she loves me for who I am. Okay? But we do that because of what we see in them and who they are. It's genuine. It has integrity. And that is radical and life-changing and world-changing. Yeah? You have a growing church because you have integrity in your relationships and real love and care for each other in our relationships. It doesn't matter all the time what we think in terms of our different ideas about legalism. What matters is that we love each other. And sometimes that's not always easy. I have to tell my son things that I don't want him to do because I love him. I don't let him do anything he wants. So, you know, we don't need to go down that route. If you want to, you can come see me at the end. All right? The crux of this passage is that there is more than just crumbs for us Gentiles. There is a life in all its fullness, in all its abundance. And I think and believe absolutely compellingly that isn't just for a certain demographic of people who have cultural beliefs. It's for everybody of every lifestyle, of every background, of every region, of every place. It is for all. So let's believe that this morning and think about being challenged about the Syrophoenician woman who is clever enough to say, it's not just for them, is it? It's for all of us. And Jesus can say, yeah, yeah, it is. So go and live life in all its fullness, and your daughter will have that too. Okay, thank you very much.